Did you miss the Tell Me More radio show on Thursday? No worries. In this podcast, you can listen to all the highlights.
Free my father!
Free my father!
Free my mother!
Free my mother!
Free my father!
Free my father!
Free my sister!
Free my sister!
In the Xinjiang region of China, Uyghur Muslims are held in camps. According to Chinese government officials, this is for re-educational purposes. Rights groups and former prisoners, however, tell a different story, one of torment and coercion. On October 2nd, a protest against the genocide of Uyghurs took place in front of the embassy in China.
So why are you guys here?
First of all, I'm Turkish, and in our history, Uyghurs are our ancestors. Yeah, that's a major reason why I'm here. Just want to support. I have class. Today I had class. I skipped my class. And I want to say to my friends, I hate you.
So I'm here to show support to the community. Because I'm a Muslim myself. And we stand against human beings. We stand for them. We stand by them. If you put religion aside, they are human beings. And they don't deserve to be treated that way. So that's why I'm here.
Because
the human rights.
Yeah, it's wrong. It's against the human rights. Yeah. You can't be treating people like animals. Even you can't treat animals like that, so it's wrong.
So we'll ask new genocide and no one is doing anything about it.
Like, UN is doing nothing about it.
It's really...
I know European Union is doing nothing about it because it's not a European country, but United Nations.
Yeah, like, still they don't care about Muslims and they don't want to do anything against China because China is really powerful in the industry everywhere, so they don't want to cut their relations with them, I guess. But in the meantime, there are people dying and suffering and getting their organs of their body.
You don't have to cut relation with them, you can just punish them.
Yeah.
And like economic punishments or something, you just punish a whole community, a whole... are suffering because we are Muslims.
No.
It's just stupid.
We cannot accept that and close our eyes, so that's why we're here to support them.
Life is just a common human right. You can't just take that away.
There's something happening in the world where people are killed. It's just a history repeating itself. What happened with the Jews during the Nazi Germany, it just happens again, and not a single country does anything about it. There are no sanctions against China, and if people go together and they support and they show it with media, then maybe they could change something in the world. Because if more people know it about this, I guess there will be someone who can do actually something about it.
If more people know about this, I guess there will be someone who can do something about this. But what is there to know? Kim spoke with Stijn de Klerk, who is a professor of modern Chinese law at the University of Leuven, to find out how the situation of putting Uyghurs in camps came about.
So we really wanted to learn more about the situation in China and about the Uyghurs there. That's what we're going to do right now. And the first question, who are you? Can you explain what you do? And why we ask you this question, maybe?
Okay. I'm Stijn de Klerk. I teach modern Chinese law at the University of Leuven for quite some time already. My background is I'm a jurist, so I studied law mainly in Belgium. Then afterwards I went to China, first to learn Chinese language and then to study Chinese law. So at this moment I combine the job at the University of Leuven with my job at Amnesty, both focused on Chinese law, human rights, and all of these things. At the KU Leuven, of course.
A lot of people here don't really know who are the Uyghurs and what is the social structure in China. Maybe we should start with that. Like, what are the different ethnic groups over there? Which one is the most dominant one, and why?
Okay, so in China, officially there are 56 ethnic groups. There's one majority, which is the Han Chinese. And there are 55 what they call ethnic minorities. This is a result of a policy of the communists. When they came into power, they started dividing like everybody in the population into like an ethnic group. And everybody belongs to one of these groups. It's also written on your identity card.
Okay.
So basically, the Uyghurs, as you call them in English, or the Uyghurs, they are one of those ethnic minorities. They live mostly in Xinjiang, which is a region in the northwest of China. A lot of them are Muslim, while some of them are not. They have a very different culture and a very different, outlook, you could say, than the Han Chinese. They have their own language. They have their own habits, their own culture.
Why does the Chinese government, the Han ethnic group, why do they do this?
Well, there's already like a history of discrimination and one could even say like apartheid against the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. Like I said, they are very different from the Han Chinese, also have a very different history, and there was always this lurking fear of the Chinese government that they would try to separate themselves. In 2001, there was a major shift. Of course, 9/11 happened during that year. You saw that the Chinese government afterwards started to talk more and more in terms of Islamist Muslim extremists. So like in China, basically the terrorists that were the Uyghurs, the Muslims. So basically that's how they started more and more to kind of like label people that were critical of some of the government policies as like these terrorists.
I've heard of the camps in 2018, but why did they start with this? Is it going on for a longer time, and did we just find out? Or
first of all, we saw a huge surveillance system over Xinjiang. People are 24/7 kept in control by cameras with facial recognition. Everybody has to install an app on their phone. There are QR codes on houses, so basically everybody is watched the whole time. And then people started to disappear in what is called these re-education camps. For what reasons? Very various reasons. Having contact with the outside world, for example, having family members in other countries, or having an app on your phone that isn't allowed in China, like WhatsApp, for example, or like going to the mosque too often, or like wearing a hijab, like all of these things that in the Chinese government's minds could be like something that distinguishes you as like potentially dangerous or too different or something like that. We heard stories about torture, people really being mistreated over there, and in the end it's not sure when a person can come out. It's really not sure what is meant by being re-educated. It's really something that's arbitrary and that's up to the Chinese government there.
The Uyghur people that that are entrapped and they still live in China, what do they say about their family members being pulled away? Can't they go to a courtroom somewhere in China and prove like this didn't happen, the reason why they are locked away?
Well, nobody dares to say anything. Because if you say anything, or even if you go to like a court or whatever, well, you basically are the next one that's going to disappear in these relocation camps. So this is basically, there's a huge fear among like the Uyghur community to speak out. It's a fear that's not only with the Uyghurs in China, in Xinjiang. It's also fear with the Uyghur family members and friends who are outside of China. A very long time, actually, they didn't dare to say that something happened to their family members or that they couldn't find them anymore, because like a lot of people were afraid that from the moment they were going to say something, then the Chinese government might actually like treat their family members or friends even harsher.
Isn't all of this in violation with human rights? Sepa called Dr. Sophie Richardson, who is the China director of Human Rights Watch. That is an organization which documents human rights violations all over the world and advocates for solutions to those abuses. They have been detailing human rights violations against Uyghurs in China for 25 years already. The situation is getting exponentially worse since the opening of re-education camps.
There are talks of these rehabilitation camps the government has opened. What are they exactly?
In early 2017, we started to get information suggesting that Chinese authorities had begun to arbitrarily detain, so outside of any legal process, enormous numbers of Uyghurs simply for being Uyghurs. You know, the Chinese government has long regarded this population as inherently problematic because they're Muslims, because they have more of a cultural affinity with Central Asia than with the eastern part of China. And essentially along the way, the Chinese government decided that these people needed to be subjected to intensive political indoctrination and began detaining them in large numbers.
All right, so what does the Chinese government hope to achieve by all of this?
Well, the Chinese government says that this is a strategy for bringing calm and stability to the region, that if people have the right thinking, that's a term that they actually use, that if they lose their adherence to Islam, which the Chinese government refers to as an ideological virus, they will then become the kind of loyal servants of the party and the government that's desired. We look at this campaign and point to appalling human rights violations, including, you know, wide-scale denial of the right to religious freedom, the right to use your own language, you know, the right to live your culture and your way of life as you see fit.
And why don't the Chinese people stand up to their government about this?
Well, the Chinese government works very hard to tell people across the country that there is a real terrorism threat, that Islam is a threat, that Uyghurs are separatists.
All right, but now on to the West. This story has not really gained much traction right here in Belgium. The mainstream media doesn't really cover it, at least not in depth. How does the rest of the Western media handle this story, for example, in the United States?
Well, there has been a significant increase in coverage of the situation in Xinjiang in the Western media over the last couple of years, which I think is largely in response to the scope and the scale of human rights violations in the region. Perhaps it's received a bit less attention in Belgium in particular because other stories are more pressing, but I certainly hope that your audience is aware of a very distressing development last year in which some Uyghurs went to the Belgian embassy in Beijing seeking shelter and to be reunited with a family member who's already in Europe, and were turned away. This is, I think, a fairly scandalous story that still hasn't really been given the full answers that it should have.
That's very true. And how about our Western politicians? Has there been any response from them?
Yeah, there has. It's not quite what my organization is hoping for yet, but you know, across Europe, in individual countries' parliaments and in the European Parliament, there's been considerable activism around things like cultural preservation and accountability, a discussion about sanctions, the role of European companies in the Xinjiang economy. Yeah, and there's similar efforts underway in the United States, legislation making its way through Congress, administration efforts to impose targeted sanctions on individual Chinese government officials.
As Sophie Richardson from Human Rights Watch says, efforts are being made through activism in the European Parliament and legislation is making its way to the US Congress. Now, all those difficult words may sound frightening, but let's not forget that this is an issue that affects real people. People with friends and family, human beings like you and me. That's why Kim talked to Enver Erdem. He's a Uyghur who moved to the Netherlands at the age of 30 to continue his literature studies. He is now the media officer at the Dutch Uyghur Human Rights Foundation and editor-in-chief at the Uyghur Times Agency. In August, he interviewed a woman who spent years in a re-education camp where she taught prisoners Chinese.
When I heard from my friend that he was a former concentration camp teacher and she is now in the Netherlands, I asked my friend to give me her phone number. Then I called her, saying that I am from the Dutch Human Rights Foundation and I'd like to pay a visit to you. So she said, okay. I went to her with my friend and we interviewed her 2.5 hours. She was very depressed and she told me that every time after she told her story to the journalists or to the other people, she cannot sleep. She feel like very depressed for 2 days or 3 days, and sometimes she became ill just because of that. And even though she still tried to tell us everything that she remembered and she had witnessed. I came from Kashgar. I lived there till my 30 years. I lived there 30 years and I was paying a visit every summer vacation I was studying abroad. Last time I left my home is 2015. And in 2014, the Chinese policy towards Uyghur began to be very strict. And in 2014, my uncle who's living in a village, my uncle name is Tursun, he was taken away from his home. A policeman and a official cadre in the village asked him to go to a meeting. They said, there's a meeting, you need to come. And they took him away. Since then, he's disappeared. And he has 2 children. He has his wife. His wife asked from the government, from the village, from the police station about his husband. But they said, we let him go. We don't know where he is. He was a very, very silent man that goes nowhere and stays only at his home. And in 2015, I visited again and my uncle's wife told me, asked me and begging me to search him, search my uncle. And I and my brother, my older brother, asked from the police station. As he said, we cannot give you any information. They said, we cannot give you any information. But after 1 year, in 2016, in May, my uncle was released from the concentration camp. At the time, we didn't know there was a concentration camp. We didn't know because they even did not announce it as a re-education camp. Even the term re-education camp at that time was not exist. And we asked him, what did you do inside of that? He said, we just learn Chinese language and sing a song, Chinese song, and we pray the Xi Jinping, pray the Chinese Communist Party, that's all. And we asked, how is your food? And he said, very good. But in fact, just after 1 month, he was hospitalized just because of stomach problem. But after that, my connection with my family was cut off. I asked my mother about my uncle. My mother said, don't ask me. I was calling my mother every 1 week, 1 or 2 times since I was going abroad. And in 2017, 3rd of April, my mom, she went to another city to just make a phone call to me. She couldn't speak to me on her own phone, so that she went to another city and make a phone call in a public phone and told me to never come back. She said the police visited her and want me to come back in 3 days immediately. Otherwise, my family will be in danger. Instead of saying, don't come back, she said, never call me again. That is the last word that I heard from my mom. It is concentration camp. China is using the re-education term to beautify and justify their own crime against humanity, against Uyghur people. They are committing genocide inside of the Uyghur region, inside of the East Turkestan. They are killing, they are raping, they are tortured, and also forced sterilization for older women from 18 years old to 59 years old. How could it happen in this our society, in this world?
Hopefully this podcast gave you some more insight on the issues in the Xinjiang region. On the 22nd of October, you can listen live to Tell Me More on 21bis from noon till 1 p.m.